releasing the stress. We were born to shine.
Hi, it's Evan Carmichael, and you're listening to Sade Champagne on Grind Hard Radio.
I love it. I love your energy and the questions, and keep going at it. I think you got a nice show on your hands here. So everybody listening, go type in Sade Champagne Show into iTunes and give it a 5-star review.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our Suicide Prevention Special Episode 77 of the Sade Champagne Show on Grind Hard Radio. Every episode is available on iTunes. Search the Sade Champagne Show, and you can download them for free. Also, my Sade Champagne YouTube channel is another place where you can listen to the show afterwards. Thanks for tuning in all around the globe. I am so thankful for everyone's support. You have been with me from the beginning. Some of you even since my days on MySpace. All the episodes of my show are available at blogtalkradio.com/grindhard_radio. I've also posted the direct link to this episode on my Twitter and Facebook pages, so you can tune in at any time. Thank you to Travis Miller for creating and producing my show's theme song, and to Scott Swish for mixing it. If this is your first time listening, I am a professional musical artist, performer, inspirational speaker, and entrepreneur. I have created, directed, and executive produced over 300 charitable and inspirational events, including my popular Power Dream Tour and my Hold On, Overcome solo tour. I love mentoring, coaching, authentically being myself, and using my platform to encourage, empower, and bring out the gold in others. September is Suicide Prevention Month, and we have a special episode featuring breast cancer survivor, speaker, and American Cancer Society, and the Circle of Hope volunteer, Stephanie Alexandria Ramirez, and mental health advocate, published author, and speaker, Naomi Catherine Liu. We're also featuring a bonus charity spotlight segment highlighting the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I'm always booking new shows and performances. I love traveling, and if you're looking to bring me, my tours, or any of my award-winning, critically acclaimed artists, mentors, or speakers to your city or event, please email me at sadechampagnemusic@gmail.com. That's sadechampagnemusic@gmail.com for more details. Check out my Facebook page, Sade Champagne, to see my full schedule. Just look under events. I always have exciting and fun things going on. Lastly, thank you to everyone who's been watching, sharing, and subscribing to all my new videos and supporting all my new music. I'm constantly writing new pieces and creating new songs and going back into the recording studio soon with my music producers, The Quakes. To find out more about my musical journey and how you can be involved, check out my official website, iamsadechampagne.com. iamsadechampagne.com. I am live tweeting and posting on Facebook all show long, and I want to know your thoughts. Tweet me at Sade Champagne, Facebook me at Sade Champagne, Instagram I am Sade Champagne, hashtag Sade Champagne Show or GHR to join in the conversation. Shout out to everyone who you tweet me, you Facebook me, you Instagram me, you YouTube me, you email me. Your support amazes me, and I'm forever grateful unto you. You're listening to the Sade Champagne Show on Grind Hard Radio. This is our Overcomers special episode. September is Suicide Prevention Month, and this is one of the causes I raise funds and awareness for all year round. Our first special guest is with me in the studio. I've known her since she was a young teenager, and I'm proud of how far she has come. Naomi Catherine Liu was raised in Southwest China. Coming from a culture that is traditionally silent on mental illness, her desire is to live in boldness and speak out to help end the stigma against being open about experiencing these disorders. She loves spending time with her dogs and close friends. After a long hiatus, she is currently working towards going back to college to finish up her degree. She is always looking to speak more and write more with relation to mental health advocacy, especially with regards to preteens and teenagers. A suicide attempt at the beginning of 2018 was a catalyst for Somehow Standing, a book of essays that allowed others to hopefully see what the world looked like through the eyes of someone who dealt with numerous mental health disorders. Though based on her experiences through many years of battling her own mind, Somehow Standing is not a traditional kind of memoir. Instead of a story following the life of an individual, this book reveals only singular moments inside the mind of a mentally ill person. Please help me welcome Naomi Catherine Liu. Hi, Naomi. How are you today?
I am am good. How are you?
Fantastic. I want to thank you so much for being a special guest on our Overcomers special episode for Suicide Prevention Month.
Thank you for having me.
So, Naomi, what was it like growing up Asian American, and what are some of the misconceptions that people have about your culture?
Growing up as an Asian American, it's an interesting combination between what traditional Asian culture looks like with the United States, you know, thrown in and mixed in. So Asian Americans have this, well, Asians in general just have a kind of culture of everything is about what you can do and how you can get far enough. They kind of just tune out all their emotions. And it's just about, like, you know, you just have to go because you're trying to survive.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get to the States, everything here is not so much about survival as it is about success.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have that same drive, but you also have to pretend to be happy
mm-hmm.
while you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
people just tend to, if they can, they'll just turn off their emotions. And if they can't, they'll go a little crazy,
mm-hmm.
like me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the misconceptions that people have about your culture?
I think that people maybe assume that just Asians don't have those same kind of deep emotions that other people do,
mm-hmm.
just because Asians are not prone to showing it.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone still has those kinds of mental and emotional needs. They just
mm-hmm.
get buried far away inside themselves, and they don't know how to release it. And people also assume certain stereotypes, especially when it comes to Asians, because Asians typically are pretty silent on a lot of things. So there's still stereotypes about Asian women being silent and being passive, and things that people don't even really know that they're thinking will come out in the way they treat you, the way they act around you,
mm-hmm.
microaggressions, all those kind of things.
When did you realize that something was going on with your mental health? And what were your family and friends' initial response?
I first started realize, I mean, I didn't, now I know that's what was happening, but I didn't know what it was at the time. But I started, like, actually dealing with obsessive compulsive disorder when I was in the fourth grade.
Mm.
I just didn't know what it was. And even though my parents are both doctors, they did not pick up on it either.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone just thought that, like, oh, Naomi just has her quirks. That's just how she works. She just happens to wash her hands a lot and seem to think that things are dirty. She does this odd thing or that odd thing, whether it was my deep fear of, like, not apologizing to someone. So if I
mm-hmm.
even thought that I had bumped into someone, I'd be like, I'm sorry. And typically they'd be like, for what? You didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I was always just in this place of, like, feeling the need to do a certain compulsion, which
mm-hmm.
comes from a place of guilt and anxiety. That's what OCD is. OCD is an anxiety disorder. And so those things started manifesting when I was very young, but because I'm also Asian, I didn't talk about any of it. So no one knew what was going on in my mind. They just thought, oh, these are just little quirks, and no one thought to ask either. And so it just was hidden away from that point on for another, what, 7 years
mm-hmm.
until I got into high school, and then it kind of just all exploded
mm-hmm.
then. And that's when, like, my family, people around me started realizing that something was actually really wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you've grown up in Christianity. How do you think church and religion handle mental health?
I think that there's some parts of the church that they do really well in handling mental health, like often in small groups or one-on-one situations, there is a lot of positive things, but the church as a whole has a lot to learn when it comes to mental health, especially more traditional churches. There are still a big misconception that people think that depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, OCD, schizophrenia, all those different things, people think less of them as a disease or as this health problem that you have, and more as something that is a choice. Obviously, people don't necessarily think that so much when it comes to, like, schizophrenia or, like, blackouts and when people just have completely lost control of their bodies. But if you have depression or anxiety, people sometimes will think that you just aren't trusting God enough,
mm-hmm.
that you don't depend on Him enough. I had someone, a Christian, once who told me that he did not believe that I could have the level of depression that I had and also be a Christian.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, that's not okay. You have no idea what you're talking about when it comes to these things, because Jesus was compassionate and loving, and he cared for people exactly where they were at. And he didn't ask them to change so that he could care for them. He met them right where they were.
Wow.
And that's something the church has to remember when it comes to mental health things. It's not about, oh, you get better and then you're like a better Christian. It's that you may never get better, but you can still be a Christian because Jesus loves you right where you are. And that's not going to change no matter what happens in your life. After I had my most serious suicide attempt at the beginning of this year, after I got out of the hospital, my dad got mad at me, basically, for having attempted suicide. And then we were in like a screaming match about it, because I was just like, I have nothing to lose. What are you trying to do? You don't have any power over me anymore. And he literally tried to exorcise a demon from me. And I was like, there's no demon. This is just me. You just haven't ever listened, and you don't care enough to figure out who I am. So if there's something that you don't like, you assume that it's a demon. But unfortunately, that's not how it works. Just because you don't like something, just because you don't like how it's going, doesn't mean that there is a demon living inside somebody. People need to figure that out. Because that way it can just, they can just dismiss all those different mental health problems you have. They can just attribute it to some kind of spiritual thing. They don't think they need to help you. They don't think about walking alongside you are. Yeah, it's just something that they can transfer responsibility over to, so that one, they don't have any responsibility, even if they were part of the cause of how you got there. But two, so they don't have to, like, your problems and your mind and those, all these different disorders and diseases just become irrelevant. It becomes something that is just, like, it's small. It's something, it's an easy way to wrap this up and just put it aside. And that way they don't have to take it seriously, and they don't have to do anything about it other than pray, quote, unquote.
Sometimes we just don't have the answers, and the best thing that you can do is just be there for people and just be understanding as much as you can, and not look at something and take it so personal towards ourselves.
At the end of the day, only the person who is dealing with it can fully, like, they're the only ones who can really, like, help themselves if they can or they can't. Like, no one else can come in and do it for them. And sometimes that healing just doesn't come. But that also doesn't mean that there is no responsibility on everyone else around them. People want to say, like, oh, like, if someone commits suicide, like, oh, it was their choice. Like, no one could have done anything. You couldn't have stopped them. And it's like, well, yeah, at the end of the day, it was their choice. However, if you hadn't been bullying them in school, if you hadn't been shoving them into lockers, you hadn't been drenching their heads in toilet water, like, maybe they wouldn't have committed suicide. And that thing still applies just to people where they're at. If you have family members who are emotionally abusive, if you have friends that use you, if you have whatever other nasty circumstances, domestic violence, you know, whatever else there is in your life that drives you to that point, people still have responsibility for that, even if at the end of the day it's still your choice in how, whether you live or not.
It takes a village.
Yeah, you didn't get there just by accident.
Right.
You didn't get to this, like, most of the people that get to that, there are people who get to that really, really dark place, and it's just from a chemical imbalance in their heads. But often, mental health disorders are a combination of trauma and a predisposition to being mentally ill or whatever.
Right.
So people just want to, people don't want to accept responsibility for something, because they're like, oh, well, I didn't, like, hit you or anything. But no, what you do matters. How you act matters. You can't just treat people like crap and then expect that everything's going to be fine, and if they respond badly, that's their problem and not yours.
We're definitely going to get into that too, so I'm glad that you're starting to touch on that. Tell us about your new book, Somehow Standing, and where people can purchase it.
You can find Somehow Standing on Amazon in paperback or on Kindle. It's just Somehow Standing, and then my name, Naomi Catherine Liu. If you Google that, it will show up. I wrote this book because over the past 5.5 years or so, of dealing with different mental health problems. I had begun writing at some point in there just to try to process my feelings. And I always wanted to write some kind of book on it, but I ended up just writing hundreds of pages of material that just, you know, live in my computer and that I never did anything with. And I was like, you know what, maybe one day I'm going to do something with this. Maybe I won't. But then I got to this point where I had begun writing again because I had started so many different writing projects, but didn't have like a full conclusion, didn't have it being exactly what I want to be, didn't know what I want, was comfortable with putting out into the world or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I had started writing some of these essays that show up in my book when I had driven across the country because I had basically been on the verge of having a full and complete mental breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I cannot stay here any longer. So I drove from the West Coast to the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, places that I traveled, things I did, I spent a lot of time writing as a way to just release all those very pent up emotions that are within me and that were driving me crazy. And that's how I could kind of release it as I wrote it. And then I would sort of forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
But after things were going well, and then things just, you know, everything collapsed, and things went, like, I had bad things with family, with, like, relationships, with just how the way life works, like, all at one time within a span of a couple days, and that pushed me over the edge, and so I ended up in the hospital for overdosing, and I was locked in their psych ward for like a couple days or something from New Year's Eve to New Year's Day, and there might have been another day in there, like afterwards, but I can't really remember, because I don't really remember a ton of it, of what happened, other than I kicked somebody out of one of my emergency rooms, some kind of psychologist person, which I was very pleased with myself over. But anyways, I would just, after I got out, I realized very, like, I had known this for a long time because I have had suicidal ideation this entire time that I've dealt with serious mental health problems. Like, once everything went badly when I was a junior in high school, so many people around me just did not understand, and ending up in the hospital with that just sort of made me even more aware of that. I spent years trying to get my family to understand. They've finally gotten a bit closer, and that includes my extended family, because my family is very close, whether it's my cousins and my aunts and uncles or my grandparents or whatever. But there were so many others I knew that just either did not have the capability of explaining how they felt, or just weren't in a place that they were ready to. And my hope was that by writing this, people would know that, one, if they struggle with mental health, that they would not be alone, left alone, that there were other people out there who felt this, and two, for it to be a resource for families and friends of those who struggle with mental illness, just to have something to compare their personal story to, because everybody's story is different, but if someone can't quite explain how they're feeling, their relatives could read something like in my book and just get a little closer to understanding what their person is feeling. Just have a little bit, like, come from a place instead of being like, I have no idea what you're feeling, to, well, I know what this other person kind of felt, and they were in a similar situation to you, so now I might have a little bit easier time understanding what you're going through.
And what has the response been like so far?
It's been good. I wrote it and I didn't really care too much about how big it got or if it was small. It just didn't matter to me because I wrote it for one, for myself, and my only other goal was that I wanted to write it so that at least one person was helped by all the things that I've gone through, because otherwise everything seems so pointless, because mental health it's not because you're like struggling to survive in some war-torn country. No, your mind is just messed up. And I did not want that to be wasted. And from this place, I hear from other people who either deal with the same things, telling me about how crazy it is because they feel like I've written their thoughts down into a book. People who just appreciate the insight of it. I've heard of like strangers who were either suicidal or a family member of someone who was suicidal who wanted to read my book because they just, it spoke to them. Whatever it was that they heard about it spoke to them. And from that, like, that's enough for me. Like, I hope it goes farther out there and I hope it touches other people. But the way it's moved already in people that I know and people I don't is good enough for me.
That's powerful, Naomi. What are some words of encouragement and wisdom that you want to share with other students and people of color who suffer from mental health challenges?
I would say that, first of all, you know how you feel best, and don't let your culture or your family or anyone else around you tell you otherwise, because you know what you're going through and they do not. It's good to have comparison sometimes if you need to get outside your head, but know that your feelings are valid and your feelings are your own and no one else can tell you how to feel. And because you have those feelings, they're valid. Maybe they don't, maybe they're not a right summation of something that has happened, but they're still yours and it's okay to feel that way. Another thing I think for, especially for people of color who feel the drive to succeed and need to be better than their past, you know, their parents, their grandparents were, that it's okay to not be okay. And it is okay just to be like, I am hurting, I am broken, and this is right where I'm at. You don't need to wait until you get better, because you might not ever get better, to be able to share it with people. Like, those who really love you will come alongside you right where you are at. And those are the people you should surround yourself with. Don't surround yourself with people that you have to be fake around, because that's just exhausting for you and you don't have time for that. Another thing I would think that I would just say is that don't just keep putting life off, being like, I'll be happy when I, you know, finish this graduate school. I'll be happy when I get this job. I'll be happy at this point in the future. Because then if you put, like, you know, your happiness and your hope always in this very far future place, you might never get there. And it's important to do, like, do what you need now to take care of yourself, even if it, you know, puts your life plan a little off course. Like, I never thought I would leave college, but that's what I had to do to get to a point of even being able to function at all. So it's okay not to do things the way everybody else does them. That's a big thing to remember, because people feel they need to follow the status quo, like, you know, go to college, go to grad school, get that internship, get that job, and just go duh, 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 duh for the rest of their lives, just following the same beaten trail. And then there's me, who's off wandering inside a meadow somewhere because I fell off the trail a long time ago and I have no intention of going back on it because I like it out here. It's better out here. And so I'm doing things differently. I'm going back to school online. I'm not going to go in person because that's what works for me. Like, find what works for you.
Bullying prevention and suicide prevention are closely related. What can parents, adults, and administrators do to better protect children and teens?
I think that when it comes to, like, bullying and suicide and all these things, there is a huge portion where parents just have not necessarily prepared their children for what the world looks like. Like, one, we of course need to teach our children to be better. We need to teach them that it's not okay to be mean and that those things hurt, but we also need to prepare them to know that, like, even if those things happen, it's not true. Like, those people are jealous of you, or they just want to hurt you, just all these different things. They need to, like, know and be prepared so that if there's someone who is just nasty and comes into their life, they can deal with it. I also think administrators need to stop, like, pushing it under the bus. They would rather things look pretty than deal with bullying. Often we just kind of hear about all these school administrators that do nothing. When some kid's getting bullied, they don't suspend the other kid, they don't do whatever, and then the kid commits suicide. And I think it just needs to be a much more seriously dealt with issue in schools. And not even so much as, like, someone who shoves a kid in a trash can or something, because, like, I think you should get expelled for that. But even if you're on, like, a school area and you're, like, calling people names or something, I think you should be, like, in detention. If you do it several times, you should be in, like, suspended suspension or whatever it is. And there's often these just there's just a culture of passivity when it comes to all these things, and schools, administrators turn a blind eye. They're like, oh, kids will be kids, all these things. Parents whose kids are bullies, like,
I was going to say, yeah, because parents have to stop bullying their kids, too.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it, because their kids, that's going to obviously either push them into that type of behavior or push them into suicide attempts and mental health issues as well.
Yeah. Children learn from their parents, and I think something that is very key when it comes to that is that parents, like this happened in my family, and I'm sure it happens a lot, parents expect you to respect them because they're your parents. But they don't respect you, and that they don't see you as, like, a small human being who is your individual person. They see you as being just, like, property of them because they happen to, like, have an egg and a sperm meet. They think that you belong to them, and they think they can kind of do whatever they want with you because they're the parents. But children learn by watching you.
Mm.
You need to show them respect that because they are a human being.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you stop parenting. No, you still parent, but you also don't treat them. Yeah, you don't treat them like a mini slave who must do whatever you do, or you're gonna punish them in some way.
Yeah.
You know, kids are gonna watch how you react. Mm-hmm. They're gonna watch if you're mean to, like, the grocery store clerk or to the barista at Starbucks, and they will mimic you.
Mm-hmm.
Children follow what they see. Mm-hmm. So it's not just that there needs to be more severe punishment for this kind of behavior and all these different things. There still needs to be, like, it is up to parents to raise good children and kind children. And yeah, not everything your kid does is going to be your fault, but a lot of it will be if you are just, like, if you take this as a casual thing. I think too many parents think of it as just, like, oh, yeah, I'm also a parent.
Mm.
Like, I'm my job and all these things, but I'm also just, like, a parent. Like,
yeah.
You know, I go to these PTA meetings and stuff, but no, like, the responsibility of raising another human life is huge, and you need not to mess them up.
Yeah.
In their head or in their body or whatever else is, just because you took care of them physically does not mean you took care of them emotionally, mentally, and that's what's going to mess them up way more than if you forgot to cook for them a couple times or you made, like, you know, gave them McDonald's too often.
Right. Oh,
those
so
things
good.
Are going to matter so much more.
Mm.
I think that even aside from parents, like, parents need to teach their kids kindness, but we should have some kind of, like, kindness class in schools from K through 12 because high schoolers are moody and they're going to forget, and because they're vulnerable, they'll try to put other people down so that their vulnerabilities are not exposed.
Right. Naomi, what else are you working on or have coming up?
For the time being, I am still doing things just to, like, promote my book, to talk about it. I definitely, like, I write a lot about things with mental health and my own experience on social media things. I mean, with me going back to school, I am going to finish up in probably like a year and a half or so, and then I aim to go to grad school to become a therapist so that I can write more on those issues. So my biggest thing for, like, the future is I would like to write more on relationships and how these things, like, how parents affect kids and other these things, because there's all these parenting handbooks. But I think they've forgotten what it's like to be a kid. So if you're just telling an adult something else from another adult, and you've forgotten how a child thinks, you're not going to get very far. And because I am someone who just is so kind of detached from a lot of different things, I still can understand how a kid gets to their conclusions, and I would like to help other parents understand that so that their kids, like, can have a solid and safe home. And I've seen people, like, it doesn't matter how bad things get for them anywhere else, if their home is secure, if they have a loving, understanding family, not just a loving family, because there's a lot of loving family, but ones that take the time to know them,
that's
what, like, keeps them solid and grows them the most.
So how can people stay updated with your happenings and book you for speaking engagements, book signings, or collaboration?
They can contact me on my Facebook page or on my Instagram, which are both at Naomi Catherine Liu. They can also email me at nkluwrites@gmail.com. Yeah, that's how they can get in touch with me, and I respond very quickly, so
Well, thank you so much to my amazing longtime friend, Naomi Catherine Liu. I love you so much, and I'm glad to have had you in my life all these years. I feel like we've grown up together, even though I was an adult already when I first met you. And thank you for sharing your story and being a part of this Overcomers special episode for Suicide Prevention Month.
Thank you for having me. It was wonderful.
Time for a song break. Here is Britt Nicole with The Sun Is Rising. Keep listening to our Suicide Prevention Special Episode 77 of the Sade Champagne Show on Grindhard Radio.
Lost their meaning.
Are you looking for a dynamic musical artist, performer, host, or inspirational speaker for your next event? What about a mentor, vocal instructor, or workshop leader for your school, company, or seminar? Contact Sade Champagne for countless professional services that are sure to fit your particular need. She is an in-demand, award-winning, and critically acclaimed musical artist, performer, inspirational speaker, and entrepreneur who is invited all around the world. She is known for having a powerful voice, turning ideas into action, creating, directing, and executive producing popular charitable and inspirational events, and bringing out the gold in others. Her services are for all ages, backgrounds, and environments. Contact Sade Champagne at SadeChampagneMusic@gmail.com. That's SadeChampagneMusic@gmail.com to book her for your next event or project.
Hey, what's up, y'all? This is New Cupid, and you're listening to my girl, Sade Champagne, right now on Grind Hard Radio. New Cupid!
Listening to the Sade Champagne Show on Grind Hard Radio. This is our Overcomers special episode. September is Suicide Prevention Month, and this is one of the causes I raise funds and awareness for all year round. Our second special guest is on the line. Stephanie Alexandria Ramirez was diagnosed on March 23, 2016 at 23 years old with stage 2A breast cancer during her first semester at California State University, Channel Islands. She met with her surgeon that day and on March 25th chose to undergo a double mastectomy with no reconstruction. She went back to CSUCI in fall of 2016, and that was the beginning of sharing her story with others. She assumed leadership roles within the CI community to support others and encourage those facing challenges. Stephanie has recently graduated from CSUCI in May 2016 so she can enter the medical field where she can one day be able to help those whose lives have been touched and affected by cancer. She is currently volunteering with the American Cancer Society, where she provides information on resources and services available to those affected by cancer. And she has also become a breast cancer advocate, speaking at events, sharing her story with others while raising awareness and bringing empowerment and hope. Please help me welcome my dear friend, Stephanie Alexandria Ramirez. Hi, Stephanie. How are you this evening?
I am doing well. Thank you so much, Sade, and thank you once again for this wonderful opportunity.
Special guest on our Overcomers special episode for Suicide Prevention Month.
Of course. No, I'm very passionate about that as well, and I only hope for any words of encouragement in our interview today to be able to encourage someone in their journey to just continue living day to day and to continue pushing forward.
So to everyone listening, Stephanie and I met earlier this year at the Women's Empowerment Expo of Ventura County, and she was one of the guest speakers, and I was one of the guest speakers, and already when I was hearing about her story before we met, I was excited to meet her, and then meeting her, she's like a bundle of sunshine and just full of so much love and grace, and so I knew that we were going to kick off right away, and we did, and so she's been a very precious and special friend to me, and I knew that I wanted to have her on my radio show to share her story and to also use my platform to support her gifts and spread her message.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And it was honestly my honor to be able to meet you, Sade. Ever since that moment that we truly met, you've given me so much encouragement and inspired me as well to be able to speak up and share my story. And I'm so, so grateful for that as well.
Wonderful. So, Stephanie, please story of how you were diagnosed with breast cancer.
Of course. Well, on March 23rd, 2016, I was diagnosed at 23 years old with breast cancer stage 2A. There was no history of breast cancer in my family, and I was young, and that was something I never even worried about. And when I had realized I had a lump within my breast, it was the beginning of March, and when I saw it mid-March, that was where I knew something was wrong. I went over and I spoke with my primary physician, and from there, she had recommended me, and I'm forever grateful for that moment because she knew that there was something going on, but she took the time to be able to say, you know what, let's go ahead and check. And from there, I went and I underwent a biopsy where I met another doctor who told me that he was 99% sure that it wasn't cancer due to my age. And I realized that I was in a different category altogether, and I needed to be able to speak up for myself. And my mom called it my guardian angel, and I'm forever grateful for that. And I chose to question the 1%. And usually, even in any situation, anyone with that sense of authority, you tend to believe that. And 99% was something where I usually would say yes and completely be understanding for it. But I knew within myself that there was something wrong. And so I told him I didn't want to wait the 6 months that he had recommended. The mass had already grown so much, mm-hmm. and I just knew it had to be taken out. I received the news the next day that it actually was it was cancer, and I didn't really know what to say, and I went downstairs, and I spoke with my parents, and they both burst into tears, and it was a moment that really changed my life. And so March 23rd, we went into the doctor's office to go visit the surgeon, and that's when she had asked me if I had known that I was there for. I told her I did, and she told me that what the decision that I was able to make, and it was either going to be a lumpectomy, a bilateral mastectomy, or not even the option for a double mastectomy, really. But she had given that at mm-hmm. the end when I told her I didn't feel like those were the options I was going to be choosing. And she looked at me and asked me, and she was like, well, I'm not too sure if you know, but if I do a double mastectomy, I'm going to be leaving your chest completely flat. And mm-hmm. for myself, I had always prided myself so much on body image, and it was always such a struggle. But when I made that decision that day, I always tell people that it was a moment where I truly felt confident in what I was making my decision. And she looked to my parents, and she asked them if that was something that they were supporting. And I'm so, so honored about my parents that they chose to support my decision, and I'm honestly so grateful for them as well in my journey. And so she gave me the day for the 24th to be able to think about it, and just to see if I was really what I wanted to do. And after I came back on the 25th, after the surgery was scheduled, and I told her this was something I was very confident in, and I ended up undergoing a like I said, the double mastectomy, but I chose no reconstruction, and the surgery lasted mm-hmm. for about 5 hours. And my mom always tells me that she came out from my surgeon, and she's very fair complexion, and she was beaming, and she was radiating with rosy cheeks, and she said that we had removed the cancer altogether. And I was so, so happy that day as well to hear that, because one of the factors just for thinking about why I'd chosen to undergo a double mastectomy was looking at my parents and looking at how much they had been exposed to, especially for cancer, and we had never faced it before in our family. And so I knew that this was something I didn't want to have to go through again. And that's why I asked her, mm-hmm. well, is their chances going to be a little bit higher for it coming back? And that's when she told me that the chances were, because my cancer in particular was something that was, it was hormone receptive. So I'm obviously doing that. I'm generating those estrogen hormones. And so I knew that the chances for me were going to be higher, and I just knew in my heart that this was something I wanted to do. And so from there, I mm-hmm. what it's called is just I'm a part of the flat community, and it's a new community mm-hmm. altogether. So I'm also a part of the cancer community, and it's mm-hmm. something I've definitely faced, but I have yet to mm-hmm. meet anyone else who's undergone this surgery at such a young age.
So why did you choose not to have the reconstruction surgery after?
Well, when I had asked the doctor for the surgeon, I asked her if there was going to be any sensation. That was a thing I wanted to really know, because for myself, my breasts, for me personally, were such a big identifier from like my femininity and just who I was. And I thought that this was such a thing that I can be able to be loved. And I thought that this was the only thing that really made me. And when I sat on that table that day, I realized that it wasn't. And I had asked her if there was going to be, if they were just for an aesthetic look, would they actually be of any use to me? Like, and she told me that they weren't, and they were just going to be there for the aesthetics. And I didn't think that was a good enough reason for me personally. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I realized mm-hmm. that I tell people that the day I lost my breast is the day I gained confidence in myself, because wow. I realized that there was more to me than what I thought was such a big drive in who I really was and what my big identity was. And I didn't see myself with breasts anymore. And I look at myself every day, and it's truly a battle, it is. And I wouldn't tell you that it was easy, but I look at myself and I see these scars, and these scars are what a warrior has. And for me, I feel like this is it. This is my body, and this is the true self that I've always wanted to find.
I'm so thankful, you know, that you're here today. And I want to know, Stephanie, what are some words of encouragement and wisdom that you want to share with other women and girls who struggle with body image issues?
Just that there's more to you than meets the eye. I definitely feel that that's something where we need to be able to realize that society tries to tell us what we're supposed to look like, that we should be getting some certain surgeries to be able to fit that certain kind of look. And we're all composed mm-hmm. of different looks. Not one of us are the same. And there's something that sets us apart. And I feel like within ourselves, to be able to truly know that there's just more, I think that taking that time to be able to understand it, it's something that we need to be able to do and set aside. Because I would always feel like I needed to find love in everyone else and to really, truly feel like I was complete. And throughout my journey, realizing that that wasn't the case and putting out that all that love to others first, I needed to take a step back and realize I needed to put that love toward myself. And that's where we truly need to be able to see what we can do and how we can be able to move forward. Once we love ourselves truly for how we are and accept all of our curves, every stretch mark, every scar, every little thing that we feel is so determinant in what we want to truly see in ourselves and feel like we have to strive for this certain expectation, we don't need to. We need to just be able to understand that as we are, that's the true beauty that we can be able to find in anything.
I agree. And it's funny, Stephanie, because recently I posted on social media about, you know, it's something that I'm very passionate about, you know, sharing with women and girls that you don't have to sell your body for sex, that you don't have to sell your body for love, you don't have to sell your body for success, you know, that it is possible to be known for who you truly are and to live your best life without having to compromise, you know, who you are or to sell your soul. And it's funny because, of course, that post didn't get as many likes as some of the things I would normally post, or if I would have posted myself like in a sexy picture, which is not really my thing, you know, but then it would have been like, oh, there's so many comments. But I wanted to post that because that is a part of the message I believe in, because just like you say, there's so many things around us that always make us feel like who we are on the outside is all that we are. And that's why you see so many people putting so much work into their external or outer appearance, but who they are on the inside is dead and decaying, you know? And so I think that's what's so inspirational and encouraging about your message and about what you share.
Oh, thank you. And thank you very much for even having the courage to do what you did. Chade, honestly, it's something where we need to be more outspoken about it instead of just feeling that we all have to fit into this certain mold. And that's what someone had told me. And they told me that we have the opportunity and we have the ability and the capability just to be able to break that mold. And we don't have to do that anymore. And all that energy that we're putting into trying to be a certain type of way can be put into just ourselves and our growth and who we can truly be and aspire to be.
And as you were saying, there's nothing wrong with people caring how they look and with wanting to feel and be beautiful, but that's not all there is to the person. It's not even the biggest part of who they are. The biggest part of who someone is comes from within and how they treat others and how they make others feel too, and knowing what God says about us.
Yes, ma'am. I completely agree with that.
So, Stephanie, tell us about the work you do with the American Cancer Society and how other people can get involved.
Yeah, of course. Well, right now I'm currently volunteering with the ACS, and what I do is I go to a hospital, I set up a table, and I put out information just to be able to give others the opportunity to advocate and speak up for themselves and be knowledgeable of where they are in their journey, and to honestly emphasize at the end of the day that we're not alone, because that's something where when diagnosis of cancer does happen, it seems like a lot of that shock is just felt truly by the patient, but it's also felt by the family members and friends around them. And it's because sometimes we shut down completely. And for my journey, I want to be able to provide those resources to others and let them realize that there's free things within the community that they can be able to get help for, not only for financially, you've got support. And so I ended up volunteering, and I had the opportunity with Channel Islands, and that's where I first started. And so now I've been continuing that, and I volunteer once a week. I do my best to be able to do that. And so what you can be able to do to be able, to volunteer is reach out to your nearest American Cancer Society and just be able to tell them that you're there and that you want to be able to help. And they'll be more than happy to be connect you with someone that they can be able to give you that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. They're one of my favorite charities that I work with throughout the year. And so, Stephanie, tell us about the Circle of Hope and the Santa Clarita Valley, your involvement with them, and how other people can get involved.
Of course. Well, for the Circle of Hope, they honestly, that's what they did. They gave me hope at the beginning of my own journey. When I was first diagnosed, I didn't know where to turn. And so I ended up hearing about this wonderful organization in the Santa Clarita Valley. And what they do is they help individuals who have been affected by cancer and who are underinsured or uninsured and just are looking for help and support. And so they have just been such a big key factor in my growth as well as a cancer warrior. And I've just been able to volunteer with them, be a part of any events. And they were actually the organization that gave me my first platform to be able to advocate. And I'm forever grateful for that as well. And so they're always looking for volunteers. They end up setting up wonderful events to be able to have fundraisers so they can provide anyone who's going through their cancer journey with classes that they can be able to go to and educate themselves. And they can also partake in Tai Chi and yoga and just things that they can feel that they're, once again, not alone. And that's what I really love about these organizations overall, that they're emphasizing this wonderful message because we truly need to be able to come together instead of coming apart when we hear the word cancer. And that's what we can be able to do to move forward truly.
What is the biggest message you want other cancer survivors and fighters to know?
That it's okay to talk about it. Honestly, that sharing your story, if you can, it's something where we can all be able to learn and to be able to know from. That's why I'm so adamant about sharing my story on Instagram, which has been a really big platform for me. But it also allowed me to connect with others and realize that what I was experiencing wasn't just something I was experiencing, it's what others were experiencing as well. And we were able to establish a community. And even though some of those individuals that I've met along the way have not, they've left from here. I think that'd be the way to say it. It's one of those things where even though we've experienced loss, they're not truly lost, because every time I'm able to look back on those postings and see their faces, I realize that there's something more to each day, and it's a blessing in each day as well to be able to continue moving forward and to be able to have them in our hearts. And even though we've never really met in person, we've been able to share laughs and messages, which has been really great. And just knowing, I think my big message is that you're not alone. And I want to be able to let people know that. And we may feel like that sometimes, but we really aren't. And even if it's just a phone call away or a text message or anything, just being able to offer that support for one another, we should truly, really take advantage of that and continue to pass that forward.
That's good, Stephanie. September is Suicide Prevention Month. Why is this cause so important to you, and how has it affected your life?
Well, for myself, I actually experienced severe depression when I was younger, and I had really had a difficult time, and I didn't really know where I could be able to turn. And once I realized that there were others who were experiencing it, I knew that that was something I would love to be able to highlight as well, because it's suicide and even ties in with cancer. It's something that's taboo and not many people want to be able to speak about, but once we come together, have the courage to really take those platforms and those opportunities that we're given to highlight this and bring a light and show that we can all continue to bring hope to one another. That's why I feel like this is such an important message, and especially for you. And thank you so much for highlighting this as well and and taken advantage of your wonderful platform as well, Sade. Honestly, you're able to bring out the light in others when all of those lights continue to dim. And the news and everything, it gets a little heavy on us, but we can just continue to rise and continue to just truly inspire one another.
Definitely. Bullying prevention and suicide prevention are closely related, as I'm sure you know, Stephanie. What can parents, adults, and administrators do to better protect children and teens?
Well, for myself, I would honestly suggest having that transparent communication, not saying that, oh, it's okay, and just making it seem like it's less of an issue, because it truly is. And we see that it affects anyone, rather if they're young in age or if they live in an affluent community, it can truly touch anyone's lives. And once we are able to truly speak about this and realize that we need to be able to be proactive instead of reactive, I think that in itself is something that we can be able to truly take from and grow and implement within the discussions that we have with the students as well as the faculty and parents, and just educating them as well.
I agree. What else are you working on or do you have coming up that you'd like to share with us?
Well, currently for myself, I'm still looking for opportunities to be able to share my story, as well as just taking part in a lot more volunteering opportunities, like I said, with the ACS as well as Circle of Hope, just looking to be able to give back and serve ultimately, and just to be able to let others know that no matter how much cancer touches us or tries to get the best of us, it can only bring out the best in us. And that's where I truly feel like when we have these opportunities to be able to get involved, and even though we may not think that it's not making a really big impact, the smallest act truly does make an impact. And so I'm going to continue sharing my story as much as I can. I continue to post on my Instagram, like I said, because I'm living a life as a cancer warrior, but I'm also living my life as a 26-year-old woman. And I want to be able to let people know that life, as hard as it gets, we have to continue to count our blessings, because each day we're able to wake up and still enjoy the sunrise and enjoy the evening and enjoy time with friends and family. And so I feel like that's something we need to truly see and take perspective in as well.
How can people stay updated with your happenings and book you for speaking engagements or collaborations, Stephanie?
Of course. Well, for myself, I'm very active on my Instagram. So I would love anyone, if they would like to partake in this journey with me, to give me a follow and to even feel free to message me on there as well. I'm very open to any communication and questions. That's something where a lot of people, they see the photo of myself and they're not too sure how to approach me. I'm very open to it. And so if anyone would love to follow me, I post a lot on there. And my Instagram is _Steph_12. And I look forward to being able to connect and hopefully share my story and learn about other stories as well.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much to my beautiful, tremendous, amazing friend, Stephanie Alexandria Ramirez. Stephanie, thank you so much for being on this Overcomers special episode for Suicide Prevention Month. Thank you for being who you are, and I'm excited for everything else that we have in store together and how we're going to partner together and just continuing to build our friendship.
Thank you so much, Sade, and thank you for the opportunity and just being a wonderful friend, and thank you for all that you do and continue to do within the community as well. You truly not only inspired your listeners, and you've inspired me, and I'm forever grateful for that.
Welcome back to the Sade Champagne Show on Grindhard Radio. Our next segment is Charity Spotlight, where I highlight some of my favorite charities and nonprofit organizations. Tonight, I'm highlighting the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. I got connected with this amazing organization last year. They brought me in to be a speaker and key singer for their annual Walks Out of the Darkness events. And they have them all over the state, and I'm pretty sure all over the country as well. And I had a blast being able to participate in three of their walks in Santa Monica and in Ventura County and also in Pasadena. And they raised hundreds and thousands of dollars for this amazing organization, and I am looking forward to working with them more. So I want to share with you all some information that I found from their website so you all can be more updated and get details about the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Their mission is to
to save lives and bring hope to those affected by suicide. Established in 1987, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, aka AFSP, is a voluntary health organization that gives those affected by suicide a nationwide community empowered by research, education, and advocacy to take action against this leading cause of death. AFSP is dedicated to saving lives and bringing hope to those affected by suicide. AFSP creates a culture that's smart about mental health by engaging in the following core strategies: funding scientific research, educating the public about mental health and suicide prevention, advocating for public policies in mental health and suicide prevention, supporting survivors of suicide loss and those affected by suicide in our mission, led by CEO Robert Gebbia and headquartered in New York, and with a public policy office in Washington, D.C., AFSP has local chapters in all 50 states with programs and events nationwide. AFSP celebrates 30 years of service to the suicide prevention movement. Learn more about AFSP in its latest annual report and join the conversation on suicide prevention by following AFSP on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. For their history, in 1987, a small group of caring individuals had a vision to establish a private source of support for suicide research and education, and essential suicide prevention efforts could be sustained into the future. These founding families, each of whom had lost someone to suicide, joined with scientists to create what today is the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, or AFSP. Many of our original founders were concerned about an alarming rise in suicide youth over the previous four decades. During this period, the suicide of young men had tripled, while for young women it had doubled. Suicide is currently the third leading cause of death among young people aged 15 to 24. The highest overall rates of suicide are for adults ages 40 to 59. Before AFSP, there was no national scope not-for-profit organization dedicated to understanding and preventing suicide through research, education, and advocacy. Since its founding in 1987, AFSP has mobilized and connected tens of thousands of people who have lost a family member, loved one, or friend to suicide. They have reached thousands of individuals who are at risk for suicide, as well as those who love and care for them. They have attracted the participation of members of the scientific and clinical communities who conduct groundbreaking research on suicide and its prevention with support from AFSP. They have established local chapters in all 50 states. They have educated hundreds of local communities about suicide and how to prevent it. They have created a public policy and lobbying arm by merging successfully with an existing national policy organization, thus enabling AFSP to press for legislation and policies at the federal, state, and local levels that advance the goal of preventing suicide. They have substantially increased their funding from individual donors, including the thousands of highly motivated individuals who participate in our Out of the Darkness walks. They have educated reporters and the media about how to best cover suicide. They have communicated with hundreds of thousands of individuals through their website, social media, brochures, speakers, and efforts to generate press coverage. And to get involved with AFSP, check out their official website, afsp.org, and you'll also see all their social media handles on there as well. Are you passionate about volunteering and helping those in need? What are some of your favorite charities to support? Have you been affected by suicide in any way? I want to hear your heart on this. Tweet me, Facebook, or Instagram me using hashtag Sade Champagne Show or GHR or Charity Spotlight to join in the conversation. I am live posting and tweeting with you all show long. And even after the show, you are welcome to reach out. Thank you to everyone who tuned in tonight to our special suicide prevention episode 77 of the Sade Champagne Show on Grindhard Radio. Thank you for downloading, subscribing, and sharing my radio show. Thank you to my special guests, Stephanie Alexandria Ramirez, and Naomi Catherine Liu. Thanks to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention for all the great work they do year-round. Here's my brand new single, Hold On, Overcome. It was written and executive produced by The Quakes and is available worldwide everywhere music is sold digitally. And you can also get it on a CD at my live events or through my website, IamSadeChampagne.com. I'm Sade Champagne, and thanks for listening to my radio show on Grindhard Radio. I don't ever take your support for granted.
Releasing the stress. We were born to shine.